Welcome, everyone, to episode 116 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about Kawhi Leonard's mysterious health updates, Jimmy Butler's knee injury, and some possible updates to the playoff format. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We would love any feedback. We're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. I think it helped. It was kind of therapeutic for us to go on a political rant for 25 minutes the other day.
I think so.
I feel a little bit better now.
Yeah. And I feel better that your former team, the Chicago Bulls, decided to not only tank by resting a bunch of their healthy veterans, but then throw away a game that they should have beat the Sixers on Thursday. So shout out to the Bulls for that.
That is, under normal circumstances, in a season where they'd be trying to win, it'd be totally Bulls.
Yeah,
but
right.
This time around, they actually did something right, which is impressive.
Yeah, it was great for both teams. It's a win-win all around, even though only one team actually won the game. all right, Mort. So last time we recorded, we were talking about the Western Conference playoff picture, and we were discussing which two teams were going to miss. There are eight teams in the mix for those 3 through 8 seeds, basically. And I mentioned the Spurs as a team, not that I thought was going to miss, but even though they were the 3 seed, I was at least a little bit hesitant about them. And you looked at me like I had 5 eyes, which is fair because they're the Spurs, and that's just, always expect them to win 50 games and be in the playoffs. That's just what the Spurs do. A couple hours after we finished recording, Greg Popovich met with the media, said he would be surprised if Kawhi Leonard came back to play this season. Right, I'd say an hour or two after that, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN dropped a Woj bomb to end all Woj bombs. He reported that Kawhi has been medically cleared to return from the right quad tendinopathy that he's been dealing with since last season, but he is elected against returning to the active roster. And if he returns, it will be because he has decided he can manage the discomfort of the injury. Mort, what do you think is going on with Kawhi and the Spurs?
Oh, I wish I knew, because this is getting frustrating and it's getting weird.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's almost a Derrick Rose situation back when he tore his ACL and the Bulls apparently cleared him to play.
Right.
And he didn't feel comfortable returning. That was all the way back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ended up sitting out the year. Obviously, Kawhi has played 9 games this year, so he wouldn't miss a full season, but close to it. So it depends on where you're at in terms of what you believe. Do you believe that Kawhi wants out of the Spurs,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing this from a strategic standpoint? Then it doesn't even make sense, because what would you gain from not playing, honestly? So I think there is an element of pain that bothers him to the point that he feels, I shouldn't risk it.
Yeah.
The Spurs are obviously trying to go for it. They're in a win now mode, which they always are, to be fair to them. And I just think Kawhi looks at it a little bit differently. He might be taking a long-term approach, keeping himself open I could play, but I don't feel entirely comfortable. And if I'm going to switch teams in the summer, like force a trade or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I could sit out. But, it's how would he even go about that? The man doesn't even talk.
Right.
Like, how would he even demand a trade? I'm not even sure how that's possible, really.
Submit it in writing, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Out.
Yeah.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, look, I was I was trolling our former co-host,
yep.
Sarah Chile, a little bit on Twitter.
Yep.
She still hasn't spoken to me, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fair. I don't entirely blame her for that.
Yeah. No, I shot her some DMs with some trade proposal for Kawhi, and she got pretty pissed, which is fair.
Yeah.
But the sad thing is, I did it as a joke, but now, it might actually it might become true.
Yeah.
Teams might actually call up the Spurs and they might engage in dialogue to find out what's a suitable deal for Kawhi Leonard, which is, I mean, if I told you this like a year ago,
right,
I would have been the one with five eyeballs.
Right. That's true. Or unless it was like they called up and offered LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Steph Curry.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But, oh, God, look at that, by the way. Just you just touched on something important there. Like, the return for Kawhi Leonard isn't going to be, like, a Kevin Durant or LeBron James. Because if he wants out, then that's going to severely limit his trade value. We saw how cheaply stars were traded last summer. Mm-hmm. And before you mentioned, well, Victor Oladipo turned out to be great.
Right.
We didn't know that.
Yeah.
So,
and, I mean,
yeah.
No offense to Paul George, Boogie, Jimmy Butler. A healthy Kawhi Leonard is a tier above all of those guys.
Yep.
But this injury cast doubt on, like, how comfortable can you feel trading for a guy who very well might miss, as you said, probably 73 games this year, who's been dealing with this injury for more than a year, who is going to opt out. If he comes back healthy and avoids another injury next year, he can become a free agent in 2019. So you're getting him for one more year. It's, yeah, I mean, that's, if the Spurs went down that road, it's going to be tricky for them to traverse, because I think they're relative to a healthy Kawhi, they're not going to get anywhere near that value.
Nope, I don't think they are, which ironically makes the specific trade proposal I mentioned to Sarah somewhat fair.
Oh, no. I don't even want to know. I think I saw it, actually. Sure. And it was,
yeah.
It was very offensive. I do not blame her.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Mort, so Woj and Michael C. Wright, toward the end of January, had reported that the relationship between Kawhi and the Spurs was becoming strained. And I think we talked about it briefly at the time, and we both just kind of chalked it up to, you know, I think probably, as you said earlier, everyone on both sides is just frustrated with this whole thing. Like, Kawhi's frustrated that that he can't play and that his body is not recovering the way he would like it to. I'm sure the Spurs, you know, they're not going to throw this dude under the bus publicly because this is their franchise player. But, like, Pop did come out earlier this season and say, like, this is just the weirdest thing I've ever seen. Like, Tony Parker had a more severe version of this injury. He came back and late November, he's been fine, and he's almost a decade older than Kawhi. Like, this is weird. So, in this latest report from Woj, he again said, the injury rehab and timetable for return has complicated the Spurs and Leonard's relationship, causing tension and fraying the fabric of what was once a strong partnership. The uncertainty surrounding this season and Leonard's future, which could include free agency in the summer of 2019, has inspired a palpable stress around the organization. So, yeah, that goes, I mean, now that begs the question, Mort. How, I mean, the Spurs are approaching this season as though he's not coming back. So, even if they make the playoffs, that eliminates any chance of them beating Houston or Golden State. How do they approach this summer and next season? Should they really start listening to trade offers for Kawhi? Like, it sounds sacrilegious, but if he's really pissed at this organization, what do you do?
I would flip it on its head. Like, if you are Kawhi Leonard and you're pissed at the Spurs organization, would teams be looking at him as a problem child?
Mm.
Because how can you be upset at the Spurs organization?
Well, LaMarcus Aldridge was last year.
That was for different reasons. That was because he was thinking of, like, I'm gonna be the same guy that I was in Portland,
right?
And you see now, like, he re-signed with them just after a chat with Pop.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, if things are bad in San Antonio, it's redeemable.
Yeah.
But if Kawhi somehow is not really willing to open up a dialogue or anything like that, then you have to take into account, what is Kawhi the type of guy that you can build around? Is he a guy that we want to have us take around, or is he a guy who's just going to throw us under the bus as a franchise if something goes against the way that he's thinking. Now, this is just me thinking out loud. I'm not saying it's like that. Very, very important. I think this is all about frustration. I also think there's possibly a level of miscommunication. I mean, let's be frank. Kawhi isn't the greatest communicator out there. And, you know, with the Spurs, as I said, being in a win-now mode, it's just a whole bunch of things are just collapsing right now. And I think that's just the end of it. I wouldn't be surprised after this season when everything calms down, Pop and Kawhi, like, hash it out. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But it doesn't hurt to pick up the phone.
Yeah, I wouldn't. If I'm the Spurs, I'm not actively shopping him. I'm at least making it clear that I'm listening to offers if they are not insulting, like the ones you have been proposing to Sarah.
Yeah, but, exactly. Yeah.
But and that's not necessarily because I think the relationship is irreparable, but I mean, really, with him a year removed from free agency, or likely a year removed from free agency, that's just doing your due diligence. If you can get...
It is.
You know, if you can get, like, multiple... Like, if the Sixers called up and offered Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid for Kawhi Leonard, if you're the Spurs, you at least have to entertain that. Because you have both of those guys locked up for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't think either side would actually do that trade, but, you know, that's the type of offer, at least, that you, if you're the Spurs, you need to listen to. Now, whether you make a move or not, I think that comes down to... Can you repair this relationship? And I think, more as you said, I think we've seen it time and time again. Injuries, especially ones that don't follow a linear timetable of recovery, tend to cause frustration and tension between players and organizations. And then when the players come back and they're healthy, everything is fine. Or it turns into a Derrick Rose situation where it just, you know, robs a guy of his career. But
Thankfully, we're not there with Kawhi in terms of the injury, I think. It's a quad injury. It doesn't seem like it's something that should prevent him from having a productive career.
Yeah, knock on wood. He eventually should be fine.
But like we agree that the Spurs would have to go into a rebuild if they trade him, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, with a re-signed LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah, right. That's why I think they probably stand pat, at least for now. And see what happens with him next year. It's a bummer. But, you know, to some degree, I am happy that the Sixers are no longer the only team with a really weird injury situation. At least this can deflect some attention from the Markelle Fultz thing. But also, it means that Kawhi Leonard is destined to become a Sixer in the free agent summer of 2019. Because if they don't sign anyone this summer, they'll have cap space. And it's perfect. His weird injury situation and the Sixers, who are no strangers to such situations, it's a match made in heaven.
Or, you know, Bulls have two first-round draft picks and a bunch of young guys. If the Spurs are rebuilding, I'm just going to throw that one out there.
Didn't you say, re-sign Zach LaVine and then... Yeah. Did you include marketing in that deal?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God.
I'm just gonna read it. I was teasing Sarah. I said a re-signed LaVine, whoever they pick with the Pelicans pick, because I did not give in the Chicago's original own pick. Portis, Valentine, and Justin Holiday, fair offer. And Sarah responded, "I'm never talking to you again."
Yeah, Sarah, I know you're listening to this. Seriously, don't talk to Mort for a month. That's ridiculous.
Oh, that would probably be a kind punishment.
Yeah,
a month. Right. That's letting me off easy, honestly.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on Kawhi, Mort, or do you want to go to the other big injury news of the week?
Oh God, I almost want to find something to talk about with Kawhi so we can just avoid this one. But let's just pulling off a Band-Aid. Let's go for it.
Okay. So, Jimmy Butler. During the Timberwolves game against the Houston Rockets on Friday night, went down with a non-contact injury to his right knee. Obviously, you know, as sports fans, we see that and we are immediately trained to fear a torn ACL. Luckily, the Timberwolves announced Saturday that it is not a torn ACL. they released a very vague press release instead and says they gave him an MRI and it revealed a meniscal injury. No word as to how severe it is. Shamsharani of The Vertical later reported that it is a meniscus tear, but again, we don't know the severity, like grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. Sham said that Jimmy is now investigating options for treatment. The two big ones, he can either get a meniscectomy or a meniscal repair. The meniscectomy is a removal. I believe that's the one where you get that and you come back more quickly, but it has longer-term side effects in terms of, like, as you get older, your knees are just going to be in worse shape, whereas the repair, that's going to bring an end to his season, most likely, but longer-term, it's probably more beneficial. Again, we don't know which route he's going. We don't know the severity. We don't know his timetable to return. But more, let's just, assume the worst for now. Let's assume that Jimmy is done for the year. What does that do to the Timberwolves? Because they, like the Spurs, are in that mix of a bunch of Western Conference playoff teams, all of whom are jostling for those spots.
Have you seen Independence Day? The first one?
Have I seen Independence Day? That's one of my top five movies. I've probably seen that more.
Oh, okay. Yeah. 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 Mine too. So this is why we're friends, Brian. Then you remember Will Smith's character losing his best friend, his wingman.
Yes. Yeah.
Jimmy, no!
I sure do.
Yeah, that's basically what I've been screaming in my head for the past 20 hours, yeah, Brian.
I know.
And it's also what the Timberwolves have been screaming inside their heads for the last 20 hours, because they could just replace with Jimmy No with, oh, Wiggins, no! Because more responsibility to Andrew Wiggins, yep, is bad news for Minnesota. I'm sorry. I know that T-Wolves fans are pissed at me for keep speaking ill about Wiggins. And look, I sound like a hater. I get it. It's not that. It's just he is so frustratingly under... impressive.
Yeah,
he underperforms routinely, and he's just taking such a big step backwards this year, where you would think the addition of Jimmy Butler would open up the court more for him, mm-hmm, not in terms of necessarily spacing, but less attention, being able to sort of go into that third option role, and he hasn't delivered. So now you're putting your eggs in a basket that says Andrew Wiggins, and I'm not really sure that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, his efficiency, yeah, is down compared to last year, which should not happen when you're, as you said, playing next to Jimmy Butler. He should be looking at more open field goal attempts, right, not fewer. And, you know, he still hasn't taken that step forward. He's still a mediocre rebounder, not a good playmaker. I mean, he's a high-volume, low-efficiency scorer, and that's about it.
And he's 23. He just turned 23 the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So now I think we've reached that point in time where we can begin to say that, you know, the potential is still there,
yep,
but it's not going to be as significant as it was like 4 years ago. Like the ceiling is lower now.
Yeah. I guess.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, you know, I think of a guy like DeMar DeRozan, who we thought we knew who he was, but then this, right, year he starts shooting threes and stops playing iso ball, and like he turns into, you know, Matt Moore of formerly of CBS Sports, now the Action Network, had him number 2 in his MVP ballot the other day. So yeah. I'm still not giving up on Andrew Wiggins. Like,
no, but that's a refinement to the game, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
Wiggins would need to add several layers.
Right. I mean, it's alarming. Like, I think you're right to say that whereas you could envision him becoming like a multi-time all-star when he came into the league, now, yeah, it's, you're starting to wonder, like, okay, I don't think he's peaked yet. As you said, he's only 23, but you do start to wonder, like, okay, what is his ceiling now? Because it doesn't feel like it's as high as it was a year
ago. Exactly, which was my point. Yeah. Like, the dude has a 12.9 PER.
Yeah, I know. It's not good.
I mean, so to answer your question, what did the Seawolves do here? I mean, at least Shabazz Muhammad is going to get minutes finally.
Yeah,
maybe. Good thing they didn't waive him.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know. Is he? Or is Tibbs just going to run these guys even further into the ground?
Well, Jimmy was hobbling on his own.
Yeah.
So going for to get the MRI. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's just so problematic. Like, but Jimmy had turned around this team for the better. He was a clear-cut MVP candidate in my eyes.
Yeah, at least.
I mean, he's never been a raw stat starling.
Yeah.
But the advanced metrics love him and for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Low turnover numbers, great assist rates, great defender, gets to the line, is efficient.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And to lose that, you're cutting your heart out of the team.
Yeah.
Where do you go from? Like, even if you find something that works, let's say Shabazz Muhammad, just for to take an example,
mm-hmm.
and you find something that's okay,
mm-hmm.
like if Jimmy's out for the rest of the year, they're bounced in the first round if they get into the playoffs.
Do you think
easily?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I completely agree with that. But do you even think they make it to the playoffs, or do you think
they're
in legit danger of missing?
I think they could be. They're 36-26.
Yeah.
They've got the Bulls tonight, so that's probably going to be a win.
Right.
I mean, I would assume, because they still have a healthy Karl Anthony Towns, though. So, if that means there'll be 11 games over 500, so that does give them a cushion.
Mm-hmm.
But they could fall apart.
Yeah.
You know, down the stretch, especially because of the factors we just talked about. Like, it really all hinges on Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah. I mean, they're,
it really does.
They're only three games ahead of the Clippers, who are ninth right now.
Yeah.
So they don't have. I mean, they have a cushion, but not a massive one.
No.
And I don't know. I mean, I'm now nervous about both San Antonio and Minnesota. Like, the race for number three feels wide open right now.
Oh yeah, it is. Oh, it is. How weird would it be to see San Antonio and Minnesota both miss the playoffs right now? Which it wouldn't be weird to see Minnesota not getting the playoffs, because we're kind of accustomed to that,
right?
But given how they played all year long,
I know.
We finally like mentally prepared ourselves, oh, Minnesota's back.
So more,
it's just so unfortunate.
I know you're gonna hate this question before I even ask it, but I have to ask it anyway. I don't want to blame Tibbs for this, because it was way he turned his knee is what caused the tear. That said, meniscus injuries can sometimes be related to overuse. Jimmy Butler is averaging 37.1 minutes a game. He did not play in the All-Star game on Sunday because he just wanted rest.
Right.
Do you think Tibbs shares any part of the blame for...
I know that a lot of people would blame to, that's because people go on the blame game immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, we have tendencies to do that as well. Mm-hmm. We're human being. I think Tibbs plays a small part in this. I don't think his role is as significant as people make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because let's be honest, I mean, a lot of guys are averaging, 36, 37 minutes. And now people are starting to go, oh, but Derek tore out his ACL under Tibbs.
Mm-hmm.
Zach LaVine tore out his ACL. Now Jimmy's gone down with a knee injury. Oh, it's all on Tibbs. Like, the Derek Rose ACL, while it was bad taste of Tibbs to keep him in the game that late,
mm-hmm.
it was never about Tibbs. It was about Chicago clearly not reading the signs. Like, I still remember that playoff game so vividly. He was hobbling.
Yeah.
Even to begin the game, like he was moving weirdly, and all that, that entire season he'd picked up these nagging injuries.
Right.
He should have been shut down before the playoffs, and just the Bulls should have said, you know what, this is horrible, but we're just gonna sacrifice one playoff because that's just how it is, and we're gonna get Derek back on track next year,
right?
Because he was just so ravaged by all these small injuries, he was overcompensating. His body just wasn't right.
Yep.
That's just not on Tibbs. That's on the medical staff.
Yeah.
Tibbs playing him at that specific point in time in the game, that's bad, but it's not ultimately his fault.
Yeah.
the Zach LaVine thing, like, that was so early in the season last year. Like, he did not even have a... And what was he at that point? 20, 21?
Yeah, it was around...
Like, young guys...
February, huh? Right? Early February?
Oh, was it that? Okay, it was a little bit later than I thought.
I think it was. I could be wrong. Okay. But I think it was around... I mean, this Jimmy injury happened later, and Derek obviously happened much later, but...
Right.
I'm pretty sure it was either...
Okay, yeah. Minnesota... Zach played 47 games. In my head, I had it as 37 games. Okay. But he played 47 games, mm-hmm. So just over half a season. And here's the thing. Zach is not known as a defender by any stretch of the imagination.
He sure isn't.
So the energy... Yeah, so the energy he exerted on the defensive end was just... not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, and he was the third option. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't in a Derrick Rose similar role where he had to carry everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something that happened. I can't blame Tibbs for that. The Jimmy thing is just, it's weird because Jimmy just plays so hard on both ends. He's one of those guys who just has unlimited energy.
Mm-hmm.
And Tibbs utilizes that. So I guess I'm giving... Tibbs partly some blame in playing him a little bit more than he should have,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to put everything on his feet. I think that's unfair.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, again, the contortion of the knee is what caused the tear. It's not like...
Yeah.
It's not... I mean, this wasn't a complete overuse injury. That said, it wouldn't surprise me if they go in and do a surgery and they go in and see, like, oh... You know, all the tissue around that area is worn down because he's been playing too many minutes. That wouldn't totally shock me. So, you know, right. I don't think it's fair to blame Tibbs for Jimmy getting hurt, but it wouldn't totally shock me if it contributed to the injury at least a little bit.
But at the same time, can I just point something out? Last year... Jimmy played 37 minutes a game under Fred Hoiberg.
Mm-hmm.
He's only playing 0.1 minutes more under Tibbs.
Yeah.
And Jimmy was asked to do a hell of a lot more under Fred than he was Tibbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, what if the injury had happened under Fred, then what? He would have gone off scot-free.
But I don't know. Would he? Tibbs. I don't know if he would.
I think it would.
If anyone gets hurt... with an injury that can be at least contributed, that overuse can contribute to an injury, and this player's playing 37 minutes a game, I kind of think Hoiberg would catch some heat too. It's popular to fault Tibbs for this just because it's been an issue for so long, and that the narrative has kind of taken over, it's like taken on a life of its own. But yeah, right. I don't think Fred would have gotten off scot-free if it happened last year.
Hmm. I have a feeling he would have, knowing the hashtag see red crowd.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it might. Maybe from Bulls fans, but I feel like outside observers would have been like, huh.
Right.
He was playing an awful lot of minutes. That doesn't seem like a good idea.
But he was playing 30. He was playing 36.9, so basically 37 the year before as well.
Yeah.
Which was also under Fred.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. It's just unfortunate. Jimmy is by far my favorite player in the game.
Yeah.
I love his demeanor. I love the fact that he's sort of a throwback in terms of his mentality. Mm. He doesn't give a damn about anything. It's all about getting better. It's all about, you know, putting in that grind.
Yeah.
The defense. Like, he doesn't need to be one of those guys who goes out and be buddy-buddy all the time. Not that I necessarily mind that, but I love that he has this approach to it. And by the way, Michael Pena did a great piece on him leading up to the season, so for Vice Sports. So if you should go back and check that one out.
Yeah. It's a bummer. Whatever option Jimmy chooses for his recovery, we hope it goes smoothly. We hope he's back soon. He's... Well, you're right. I mean, he was, I don't want to say he was a leading MVP candidate, but he should have least been in that conversation for like 4, 5, 6, that range.
Like, yep.
I mean, he really did. He's got off to a slow start, but once he picked up, the Timberwolves went right along with him. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they adjust these final 2 months and if they can keep their grip on the playoffs. It's going to, I mean, it, between the Kawhi and Jimmy thing, the Western Conference playoff picture just became that much more interesting for all the wrong reasons. But, you know, the Clippers woke up this morning and now feel a lot better about their chances.
Oh, yeah. It's so unfortunate because Kawhi and Jimmy, those are actually my two favorite players. Yeah. I've told you before, I've had wet dreams of pairing them up and on some team at some point in the future.
Yeah.
But they might have to be paired up in a hospital bed.
Yeah. Well said. All right, Mort, we need to discuss the NCAA. We're going to take a pivot from the NBA, but it could have NBA implications too, because Pat Forte and Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, they've been releasing this news in a slow trickle over the last couple weeks, basically about this whole NCAA investigation into, FBI investigation into the underbelly of college basketball recruiting, namely agencies lending a lot of players or handlers money. On Friday, they started naming names. And, you know, they've been teasing at this and basically saying, like, every major program is implicated. We're starting to see that a huge number, Duke, North Carolina, Texas, Kentucky, Michigan State, USC, Alabama, all implicated in this. ESPN on Saturday then came out and said Sean Miller, there's FBI intercepted a wiretap of Sean Miller discussing a $100,000 payment with a handler to land DeAndre Ayton, who, Mort, you are in love with, and who, I mean, a potential number one overall pick.
That was cheap.
Pick. Yeah.
That's cheap.
Right, for a potential number one overall pick.
Oh, my God. That's a good deal, Coach.
For real. So, Mort, I feel like the first thing that I just want to say off the bat is I love the NCAA trying to plead ignorance here. Like, that.
Oh, yeah.
Their response was like, oh, we just didn't know anything. I'm going to read part of a statement from Mark Emmert, who is the NCAA president. He said, these allegations, if true, point to systemic failures that must be fixed and fixed now if we want college sports in America.
You shouldn't want college sports in America, at least not basketball.
I mean, that's a fair point, too. But, like, I have zero sources. But everyone knows this has been going on for years. And I was talking I was talking with people last night about this. And they're like, oh, well, you know, UNC is cleared because their players only took a couple $100. I'm like, dude, do you think this is the only agency that's doing this? Like, this is the tip of the iceberg. Every agency is doing this. Every major college basketball program is doing this. Every shoe company is doing this. This is just how business is done. And it's because the NCAA doesn't pay these guys or doesn't allow, not only doesn't pay them, but doesn't allow them to make money in any way. Like, they can't take.
That's the problem.
Yeah, they can't take endorsements. They can't take sponsorships.
Right.
Can't make money off of their autographs. So this is a multi-billion dollar enterprise, and the players are getting zero. So of course there is going to be, I don't even want to call this corruption. This is just how it should be. Like, these guys should be getting some amount of money. I'm frankly happy that there has been this underbelly for so long. That said, what do you think happens now? Is the NCAA, do you think they can rule quickly enough to impact some of, I mean, Miles Bridges was named in this report from Yahoo, Colin Sexton, Wendell Carter, all of whom are mentioned as top 10 picks, Ayton now too. I mean, that we're looking at possibly four or more of the top 10 picks in this year's draft class.
The NCAA would kill their own product if they just kind of threw them out at their respective programs.
Right. So do you think are they going to act quickly enough to ban, you know, prevent, like, say you can't play for the rest of the year? Or do you think it's going to be like a Louisville thing where they just think, like, we need more time to investigate this. Everyone can play. And then we'll just retroactively strip your championship, which means nothing. Who cares?
Well, dude, March is right around the corner.
Right. I know. It's like 2 weeks away.
Exactly. And they have all these sponsors lined up, paying all the big bucks to watch the big names.
Mm-hmm.
So they are definitely going to take their time reviewing these things.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, oh, we came up with something when those guys are already in the NBA.
Yeah.
Look, I have zero respect for the NCAA's way of handling things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I have a problem with them not being able to pay their players, because as Coach Nick actually put up a tweet about, yeah, which was pretty interesting, was you can't just pay basketball and football players in Division I. Like, you would have to pay every athlete a certain amount of money. And if that number was, say, $1,000 a month,
mm-hmm,
then you'd be spending, I think he summed it up to $5.5 billion, yeah, dollars a year in player salaries.
Right. Yeah. So title, and what you're referring to is, yeah, Title IX, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender in academics and athletics. So in other words, men's basketball, yeah, and college football are the only two sports overall that produce revenue. They help, right, subsidize every other collegiate sport. So, right, you can't only pay the men's basketball and college football players, because that'd be a violation of Title IX. You would have to pay female athletes or give them an equitable chance to earn money. So, yeah, I mean, as you said, the cost would be too prohibitive, or potentially, right, too prohibitive, especially for schools that don't have a major college football or men's basketball program that, you know, drives hundreds of millions in revenue. Mm. Like, you just can't do that.
Right. So I have this thing called, and it's just a personal thing. Mm-hmm. I call it the McDermott rule.
Okay.
And it's based on a scenario that, mm-hmm, that thankfully for Doug, McDermott has not played out.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we know, Doug McDermott was a star at Creighton for 4 years,
mm-hmm,
and he was a star immediately, right off the bat, averaged like 15-7 in his freshman season,
mm-hmm,
and just became a scoring machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this scenario is, let's assume that Doug McDermott in his final collegiate game just fell,
mm-hmm,
badly,
mm-hmm,
career over, back broken, legs, whatever, mm-hmm, just something awful happened.
Yeah.
This guy was such a big product for Creighton for 4 years,
yep,
and he was on the national radar for 4 years.
Yep.
Had he just been allowed to earn money on his own image and his own name, mm-hmm, he could have walked away after that injury having possibly pocketed, what, $5 to $10 million off of ads to over a 4-year period?
Yeah, I mean, because of, yeah, I have no idea, yeah, how much, but yeah.
No, but like, at least a couple million, at least. His name was that big.
Yeah.
Like, he was frequently highlighted on ESPN. Like, he was everywhere.
Right.
I mean, the McDermott hype was real. So that's just going off that scenario. We call it the J.J. Redick scenario, mm-hmm, because then it will also incentivize players to stick around college programs longer,
yeah,
if they were able to earn money off their own name and likeness and whatever.
Right.
Then you could actually go and say, you know what? The NBA isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel forced to go to the NBA because I'm actually earning money on the side, which I'm allowed to do legally.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of feel that I can stick around this program for a year longer and develop. And hey, what do you know? I come into the NBA as a better player right off the bat.
Yeah.
There is no downside to letting these guys earn money off their name.
Yeah. It's
none.
It's often referred to as the Olympic model. And I could not agree more. I mean, the NCAA would allege that this will lead to, you know, a Kentucky, say, gets a huge sponsor who, like, just, you know, basically funnels money under the table, calls it like a sponsorship or an endorsement, or like says, we'll pay $5,000 per autograph for Kevin Knox.
Right.
But that's happening anyway. Like, that's the stupid part of this argument. It's already happening under the table. So it's not like, you know, they're trying to say we can't do this in the essence of fairness. Like, we want the table to be equal for, like, these smaller programs that don't have these sponsors and can't, you know, can't funnel $100,000 to all these recruits. But everyone's doing it. Like, Fred Van Vliet showed up in this report. Like, even these mid-major schools are doing this kind of stuff. So, that's dumb. And, like, it makes me think, like, I don't know. I mean, the UConn women's basketball team. You're telling me up in Connecticut, those girls wouldn't have a chance to be in, like, local commercials?
Oh, yeah, they so would.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think... Yeah. I really don't think it would affect all that many athletes outside of the top ones anyway. Like, I don't think a men's lacrosse player from Vanderbilt is going to be in a local ad down here in Nashville. But if they had a star football player or a star basketball player, shit, yeah, let them make money off of their name. It's their name. Who the hell are you to not let them do that?
Yep.
And then, agreed. I mean, as you said, more like, I don't think the top... You know, I don't think Ben Simmons is staying at LSU for more than a year, even if he can make money off of his own name. Because you're still...
No, maybe not.
You're still looking at an NBA salary. Like, a top five pick is going either way. But I agree that these fringe first-round guys, who might not be, you know, excited about their draft stock, but then feel like, well, you know, if I come back next year, they're only going to pick more holes in my game. I'm at least going to get $2 million or whatever to come out right now, I'm just going to do it. And it might not be good for my long-term career. Like, I might, you know, I'm not ready. I'm going to fall by the wayside, but at least I'm going to pocket $8, $9, $10 million before I go. So I think,
which would be completely fair.
Right. Like, I it would not surprise me if guys in that 20 to 30 range said, no, you know what? I'm good. I'm making $150K off of my name in college. Like, it's not as much as I would in the pros, but if I can come back, develop a year, become a better player, I'll be more ready to make an impact in the pros. I mean, it just seems like such a no-brainer for the NCAA that all of their arguments against it, you can poke holes in immediately. And it feels like...
Oh, yeah. John Oliver did that, too, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
You saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it feels like, I mean, given the breadth of this scandal, and again... This is only the tip of the iceberg. It is going to get worse for the NCAA. This is like no one should think that if your school is not named in this report, you are in the clear. Because this is one agency. Every agency is doing this stuff. It feels like the NCAA has to make some sort of substantial change in reaction to this.
And also, if you are out there blaming players,
oh my God,
you really shouldn't.
Yeah.
Because... That's the most cruel thing of all.
Right.
Like, I've seen guys on Twitter go, oh, this guy, he took a dinner and he got $400. Like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you upset at a player for accepting $400 despite earning his school millions upon millions of dollars without getting any of that moolah himself?
Yeah.
Get the... out of here.
Yeah, it's right. They're the argument of, well, they're getting, it's not like they're not being paid, they're being paid in a scholarship. That's true.
Yeah, they're not going to class.
Right.
They can't, they don't have time to go to class. Like, again, if you out there have not seen the John Oliver segment for like 3 or 4 years ago, go watch it. Like, everything is explained in typical last week tonight detail. Yeah. It's perfect.
Also, you're telling me Ben Simmons didn't make more than $50,000 for LSU? I mean, that's just a good investment on LSU's part.
Yeah.
Like, it's so stupid. Someone on an academic scholarship can have a job outside of their, you know, they can make money outside. They can have a job. Why can't a student athlete?
Because it's a jock, Brian.
Yeah.
Apparently.
They're concerned about amateurism.
Yeah.
But,
which is like baloney.
Yeah. I'm...
And so, and also, because I'm on this side of the pond, I also have a problem with, you know, players coming from Europe who play professionally at like age 16 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then are disallowed because they earn money previously. It's not like they would keep making that money like they did the year before. Like, a lot of guys are actually, they are getting offered money at a young age and are declining that money just so they're NCAA eligible, which is ridiculous.
So stupid.
Like, don't say no to money. So that rule is also garbage.
Yeah.
It's so dumb.
Yeah.
So yeah, just to a shout out to all the Europeans and internationals out there who I know a lot of people who have sacrificed because of that, which is so horrible.
Yeah, honestly. I'm really glad you brought up the don't blame the players point, because that's I couldn't agree more. If anything, we should be thrilled that these players are exploiting the system the way that they are.
Brian. Uh-oh. Breaking news about this case. Shaquille O'Neal's son, Sharif O'Neal, withdraws commitment to Arizona in wake of wiretap revelation.
Really? Yeah, apparently. We're going to have to... This will not be the last time we discuss this. This is going to be an enormous story. Not only if you're not into college basketball, that's fine. But this is going to impact the NBA. Indirectly, but it is going to impact the NBA.
And you know what? It could impact the NBA in a positive way, because if the NCAA crumbles to the ground, hello, G League.
Or, maybe this is the incentive they need to get rid of the one-and-done rule.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see high schoolers come back. I miss that intrigue.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see where this all goes, but... suffice it to say, it will take some time for the fallout before we have a full sense of what's going to happen. We also need to talk about, I guess, another business angle. Mark Cuban, the NBA fined him $600,000 for saying his team should tank this season. He said this on the House Call with Dr. J podcast. Cuban said this on February 18th. Mm. I'm going to read his quote exactly. I'm probably not supposed to say this, but, I just had dinner with a bunch of our guys the other night, and here we are. We weren't competing for the playoffs. I was like, look, losing is our best option. Adam Silver would hate hearing that, but I at least sat down and I explained it to them. And I explained what our plans were going to be this summer, that we're not going to tank again. This was, a year and a half tanking, and that was too brutal for me. But being transparent, I think that's the key to being kind of a player's owner and having stability.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, I understand why the NBA did it, because obviously it was pretty dumb to say these things out loud.
Yeah.
I don't get, I love Sam Hinkie, but what Sam Hinkie did to the Sixers is so much worse than these comments. Sam Hinkie stripped that team of all of its talent. He didn't come out and say he was tanking, but he performed the most in-your-face tank job in NBA history.
Yes.
The Chicago Bulls are now not playing Robin Lopez. He is otherwise healthy. healthy. He's been a productive member of their team all year, but he's just not playing anymore.
Right.
I guess it just seems kind of dumb to draw the line at all right, you can tank all you want, just don't talk about it. It's like Fight Club. The first rule about Tank Club is just don't talk about Tank Club.
But here's the thing, Fight Club had 50, 100 members in the end, so someone talked.
Yeah, right, I guess so.
I don't know. It's I agree with you. It's dumb. It seems like it's a rule for the sake of having a rule, and just to keep up appearances. We're on top of this. We're in control of this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. But everyone knows what's going on. It's so obvious, and I love Mark Cuban's excuse. That he got starstruck because he was talking to Dr. J. Was his favorite player growing up, so he just kind of talked and didn't really care.
Yeah.
It came out of his mouth. And, $600,000, that's fine. It's Mark Cuban. He's got plenty.
To him. I wish I could. Yeah. Someday, let me be in a position where I can be fined $600,000 and not bat an eye.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah. I'm with you. I understand why the NBA did it, but it's just who cares? Who cares? We all know it's good. Yeah. It's like the NCAA stuff. We all know what's going on. I understand it's bad for business to have owners openly talking about it, but
It's the same with tampering. Like, we know. Yeah. Like, we've read so many articles over the years. Like, it was basically only Mitch Kupchak who refused to contact free agents. And now Charlotte is in the hunt for him, which is ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah. Well, he's a noble soul, so...
I'm going to stick to the rules. Yeah. We're going to lose doing so, but I'm going to stick to the rules. Right. That's good. Great. Right.
Hey, LeBron. I mean, we haven't reached out to you before July 1st, but would you be interested in playing for us? We've built our whole team around that.
But it's just like teams begin this recruiting process months, if not years, honestly, before. They plan. Yeah. They make sure. Like, they speak to agents.
Yeah.
And... like, they could let an agent know, hey, we expect to have this amount of cap space in 2 years.
Yeah.
Just tap on the nose.
Right.
Like, remember that for this particular free agent. I mean, it's the way business is done these days. And the NBA seems to be, and the NCAA are both, like, holding a hand over their eye and going, oh, no, this is not happening. Mm-hmm. Oh, the horrors of which this is, if it is actually happening. And like, if they know, it's just... it's dumb.
Yeah.
It's so dumb.
This is not a direct NBA story, but I forget who wrote this. It was someone on the MMQB recently writing about NFL free agency.
Mm.
And it was a look into how they all violate the tampering provisions. Like, I guess in the NFL, you have 2 days before free agency starts where there's a legal tampering period, kind of like the July moratorium for the NBA. But turns out, teams and agents have been talking long before the legal tampering period. And this was he went through and, like, I guess it was some high-profile free agent who they did not name. But they went through and explained, like, how the entire year leading up to his free agency, how many teams reached out to his agent and were just like, hey, you know, what's your guy going to do? We have, you know, we're interested. Like, what? Give me a ballpark as to how much he's looking for this year.
Yeah.
LeBron James has been in touch with every team he is considering already. Or like his his agents or whatever. Like, maybe
It's not like LeBron calling up Magic. Hey. Right.
Hey, Magic.
Hey Magic, I've got to talk to you for a minute. Don't say this to the media, goddammit.
Yeah, right.
Just be quiet.
Yeah. But I believe he's represented by Rich Paul. Rich Paul has you know, I don't think it was a coincidence that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope signed with the Lakers. It was how's my client Kentavious? Oh, yeah, and by the way, did you know LeBron James is a free agent this summer?
Yeah. So here's the thing. The crux of the matter here is actually a little bit deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's because fans, most fans, like we are guys who are making sort of a living doing this thing. So we have a different point of view.
Sure.
You know, casual fans get more emotionally invested in a sport because when they watch basketball, it's with the heart, it's with the emotions, and that's how it should be. Like, there's not a problem with that. So I think it's part of that the NBA and the NCAA, they try to keep it as pure as possible for the average fan. So they can, in a guilt-free way, just immerse themselves in this feelings orgy of the romanticism of sports.
Yeah.
Whereas you and I and people who write and work in the industry, you know, and have connections and understand what's going on, like, we've grown so accustomed to this. So every romantic thing that's involved with it, it's gone. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't romanticize the game anymore. Mm-hmm. We just, when a player signs somewhere, the average fan go, oh, he followed his heart.
Right.
In his heart, this guy's a Detroit Pistons, a Piston, and not an Orlando Magic.
Yeah.
Whereas we go, yeah, that was because he was offered 25 million more dollars, right? And, It's just a different way of going. And sports will always be and like have a strong place on the emotional spectrum.
That's
and true. I think that's partly why these leagues are just looking at it and trying to go, oh, we need to keep it so pure as we can. Mm-hmm. Because now we see in football, normal football, not American football,
mm-hmm.
We see how much influence agents have. Like, over superstars in Real Madrid and Barcelona and Manchester United and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become such... it's become public in a way that a lot of fans have simply gone, oh, they've just taken all the fun out of it. It's all become business and money, and it's all right there in my face whenever I just open like a website. I don't feel emotionally attached to football anymore. Like, where's my sport at? Mm-hmm. It's all about money, money, money. And I think the NBA, who I know, by the way, are looking a lot at the Premier League, because they share a lot of things with the Premier League system. They look at that and go, uh-oh, we don't want to end up there. So yeah, we should keep our things a little bit more private. That's also why I think teams are not allowed to tell people what the monetary terms of the contract.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's true. All of it seems weird. Like, how dumb do these leagues think the average fan is? Like, it kind of just seems insulting to our intelligence at this point. Like,
but it is. It is. But, I mean, look, if you're a casual fan who checks in on the NBA maybe once or twice a week, and you don't go in and read articles and whatnot,
yeah,
you're still a paying customer.
Yeah, but if you're a casual fan, are you going to... Do you care that a team has announced the terms of a contract, or that? I mean, I get it for the tanking thing. I get it, because then you're gonna if Mark Cuban comes out and says my team is actively trying to lose for the rest of the season, bye bye ticket sales for March. I understand there is a business component to that, but
right.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, the Bulls still somehow sell out most nights. I mean, if you're frankly, if an owner is doing that, you should have incentive for those games, lower ticket prices, lower concession prices, like make those games mm-hmm. more appealing to come to for fans. Like,
right.
You know, I'm not going to pay $50 to sit in the upper level and watch, you know, David Nwaba. No offense to
David Nwaba is good, Brian.
No offense to David Nwaba, but you know,
I hear you.
I understand it. It just seems dumb.
I can tell you why, though, because when you say, you know, that the average fan should know what the player's earning, it's the football thing.
Yeah.
Because when Paul Pogba was sold for the amount that he was sold for last summer to Manchester United, I mean, a lot of fans, especially on Facebook, which, you know, Facebook is where everyone is still. And I saw so many comments about, oh, this just... There's so much money in football right now. It just takes all the joy away. There's nothing emotional about it anymore. They all play for money. They don't play for the love of the colors and the love of the team and whatnot. And it's because fans are in love with teams. They're not in love with players per se, because you know that's like a quaint relationship. When that player is sold or traded or whatever, that relationship is dead. It's like an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
So what the leagues have an incentive to keep fans being in love with the team, and the less they know about the monetary things and what goes on behind the scenes that could be a little bit sketchy, the better.
Yeah.
I think that's their thought process. But I agree with you; it is speaking down to fans. I mean, hell, why do you think I'm an ex-Bulls fan? I've look at how the way that they speak to fans and to the media, and like it's disgusting.
All right, Mort, on a brighter note, we can talk about some potentially positive changes the NBA is at least considering.
Looking forward to this one.
So Adam Silver, during his All-Star weekend press conference, said they're at least considering the possibility of you still keep the 8 best teams from the East and the 8 best teams from the West, but then you seed it 1 through 16. So, you know, if the teams with the 3 best records in the NBA are all in the Western Conference, they'd be 1, 2, 3. The 3 teams with the worst records among all playoff teams are from the Eastern Conference. The Golden State Warriors can play the Miami Heat in the first round, basically. Zach Lowe on, I believe, Thursday, reported there is also some behind-the-scenes momentum for the idea of a play-in tournament determining the last 2 seeds in each conference, which Bill Simmons of The Ringer has been promoting for
years,
a decade now, probably.
Yeah, I think so. The entertaining as hell
tournament. Right, right. Yeah. I almost don't want to see this happen just because of his reaction if it does happen.
That's cruel.
He'll just be so goddamn insufferable that...
Yeah.
But the idea is... So I guess there are a couple different proposals floating around, but the low reported, the one that has generated the most discussion, is 2 4-team tournaments featuring the 7th through 10th seeds. The 7th will host the 8th seed, with the winner of that game grabbing the 7th spot. The 9th seed would host the 10th seed, and then whoever wins that game plays the loser of the 7 versus 8 for the final playoff spot. Lowe made it clear that this is not happening this year. It's going to take, you know, he said it would be a shock if the NBA adopted it in time for 2020 or even 2021. It may never happen. The competition committee would need to approve it, and then 23 of the 30 teams would have to approve it as well. And it would require collective bargaining with the players' union. So we're still a long ways away from any type of overhaul with the playoff format. But what do you think about all the ideas floating around, Mort? Are you in favor of any of them?
I love the 1 to 16 seeding.
Yep.
I think that's great.
Yep.
The entertaining as hell tournament is not one I'm high on, specifically for one reason. Let's assume that the 7th seed that year and the 8th seed... No, wait a second. How would it, I still have to understand that one. It was the 7th and 8th play for the 7th, right?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So let's say the 7th seed is just so far ahead of the 8th seed, like record-wise.
Yeah.
And they've just been dominating to a point that the 8th seed just couldn't match.
Right.
Then it seems so unfair to me that just one game, which is a toss-up, one game is always a toss-up.
Yeah.
Should determine that sort of factor. That, to me, is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I would not want the entertaining as hell tournament because I think it's a dumb as hell tournament.
Right.
Yeah. But the 1 to 16, and I get that you know, the East and West aspect of it, like you would still have 8 from the East and 8 from the West.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still kind of intrigued by just eliminating conferences.
Just take the 16 best teams regardless.
Regardless. And then if that's all in the West, I don't care. I want the best brand of basketball in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I don't care if that means that, oh, we should find room for the Knicks, man. No.
Right.
No. I mean, I don't want that if they're not a good team.
Yeah. So I'm with you. So, I'm with you in general, both on, I love the idea of seeding 1 through 16, not super wild about the entertaining as hell idea. I think the big complication with just taking the 16 best teams, regardless of conference, is the unbalanced schedule. So Eastern Conference teams play more games against other Eastern Conference teams than Western Conference teams do. So, you know, the West could rightfully argue, well, you know, when the East is not as good as the West, that's not fair. So, you know, I understand that. And the 1 through 16 thing has at least hurdles to overcome, too. If you are, you know, if you're the Golden State Warriors and you're playing the Miami Heat in the first round, that is at least 2 cross-country flights to deal with. Now, you know, airplane travel is a little...
Luxury flights.
Yeah, like, there, it's a little bit more luxurious now than it was in the 1970s and 1980s, so it's not necessarily a deal-breaker, but it's at least, you know, the NBA has to consider that. That is something they need to factor in. So I know
Matt... Give him another day off in between.
Yeah, or Matt Moore has suggested the higher seed gets the choice of the format for that first round. So you could either take the normal 2-2-1-1-1 or do a 2-3-2. Which, yeah, you know, there are workarounds to it. I'm not saying that's a deal breaker by any means, but it's at least...
No, but you're right.
Yeah, it's an issue the NBA would have to... They'd have to weigh the pros and cons of, you know, does this 1 through 16 seeding, is it more advantageous given those travel concerns than our current setup?
It's a good question. I mean, I don't think travel is a big problem.
Yeah.
We've seen how these guys travel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you're not crammed into coach.
Right.
You can sleep on the plane. There's food everywhere you go. You don't need to, like, drop off at McDonald's to get something on the way or anything. You have a shuttle waiting for you right as you come off the plane. Everything is VIP. I just don't see the concern there. Mm-hmm. I think that's a luxury problem.
Yeah.
Really, I do.
Yeah. I mean,
so
I think also part of the problem, which ESPN noted when relaying Silver's comments, I think this was a report from Brian Windhorst. 20 of the 30 teams would need to approve this. So you need to convince five Eastern Conference owners.
Yep.
Do they, you know, are you going to be able to say, hey, you know, you're no longer guaranteed eight seeds if you're an Eastern Conference team. If you did just all, you know, top 16, regardless of conference. Or even if you do just the 1 through 16 reseeding, are you going to go to Mickey Arison of the Heat and say, hey, you know, this is, you're going to have to go to Golden State in the first round instead of Cleveland or Boston or Toronto?
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that that would be problematic, but then it has to be a long-term view.
Yeah.
Because what if in 5-6 year time, you know, the Miami Heat is the Golden State of the NBA?
Yeah.
Like, things can change so quickly. So if teams are voting based on current position or current state of the franchise, that would be idiotic.
Right.
You would need to look at it from a long-term perspective. And what, and also, what's in the best interest of the league?
Yeah.
Look, if I'm a team owner who's got a bad team, I'm still looking at that and going, okay, what would produce the best brand of basketball? The highest quality we can find, because that's going to attract more fans.
Yep.
Attracting more fans is good for business. Yep. It's also going to be good for my business potentially, because if then I become a good team down the road, I will have a larger fan base overall, a pool of fans that I can dig my hand into.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we, how many times have we said the Western Conference Finals turned out to be the actual NBA Finals
in
the
last 10 to 15 years? Yeah.
Like, you know, if hopefully, knock on wood, we'll avoid any more injuries moving forward. But like Rockets Warriors Western Conference Finals, that is the playoff matchup I'm most excited about, regardless of conference. Like, that, those are objectively the two best teams in the NBA. It would be great if those two teams could meet in the NBA Finals. That would be entertaining as hell.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened in a while.
Yeah.
Really.
The two best teams meeting.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you think back on it, like back in 91, it was the East who had the real finals, because that was the Bulls and Pistons with the great history there. And then the Bulls came to LA and spanked the Lakers in five, which was really not all that competitive. Like the NBA finals there was really the Pistons and Bulls. So the momentum swings.
Right.
And it just seems like, because we're stuck right now in a Western lull, we just go, oh, the West is going to dominate that thing for the next 20 years. Well, that's not necessarily.
Yeah, there's plenty of young, good talent in the East now.
Yeah, there is. I mean, obviously, and I raised this point about a year ago on this podcast as well, like the draft format could potentially change a little bit, because if the Western Conference, a Western Conference team that is strong but is outside of the playoff picture because of a stronger conference, then, you know, that would be a playoff team in the East. If they won the lottery, it would just only make the West stronger the East weaker.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure that's not going to be a pressing issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm at least encouraged that the NBA is considering these proposals. Whether they act on them or not, it's anyone's guess. Again, don't expect this to happen anytime soon. It sounds like it's still very much in the conceptual phase. But, like, shout out to the NBA for realizing, hey, you know, like, we have a great product. There are ways to make it even better. And let's actively try to, let's be proactive about that instead of reactive. That's a great,
if it ain't broke, break it.
Yeah, like that is a great mindset for this league to be in. Because there, it will have a real opportunity over the next 10 to 15 years to carve out it not only in America, like a huge global presence, even bigger than it already has. Mm-hmm. So again, like trying to find ways to improve your product, as you said, more before it's even broken, that's great.
Yeah. I think it's a good way of doing it. I mean, just, I think David Stern was always kind of set in his ways. Mm-hmm. And now you're looking at Silver, who's just open for everything, every idea. Everything is just a wide share of knowledge mm-hmm. to improve the product overall, which is definitely the right way to go about it. I think we're reaching an age, not just basketball-wise, but politically and socially, where tradition is kind of thrown to the curb a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like we as human beings are seem to understand now that, you know, traditions are great, but it's not the end all of be all. If we always focus on tradition, we won't move anywhere. So Right. Progressiveness and creating new traditions and creating new elements that will ultimately improve certain situations is something we desire a great deal, and the NBA has latched onto that ideal mm-hmm. and are doing a wonderful job with it. I mean, look, just next year, we're going to see a different lottery system.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like the mindset of that's the way we've always done it, so we'll continue to do it that way, is very detrimental in any, as you said, more, not just in sports, but in any phase of life. So it's, not only do I think Adam Silver deserves credit, I wouldn't be surprised if Michelle Roberts is driving a lot of this too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I think it's...
You have to have an open mind, like, to go into those discussions.
Right. So I think the leadership on both sides, players and the league office, team owners, you know, they deserve credit. They've been proactive since Silver took over. They avoided a huge labor shutdown this past year. Seems like, you know, they understand this product is going well. Let's not F it up. Let's just keep the momentum mm-hmm. going. And the league's in a great yep. place, all things considered. I mean, you know, we've had a number of devastating injuries to top stars, and yet, like, look at how many teams and good players are left. Like, the league is in a great place overall.
Yep. Now imagine a season wherein players don't get injured.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God.
I know. Let's play an NBA 2K season, turn off injuries, see how fun it is. All right, Moore, I think that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. Hope you enjoyed. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FRS Hoops with a Z. I'm Brian Toporek, and joining me today, as always, was Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'll be sitting here cackling at the fact that Andre Drummond and Andrew Wiggins are basically shooting the same free throw percentage.
What a good way to land. Wow. All right, later, Mort.
Later.